everyone. This is Sam.
And this is Corrine, and we are still two onk ducks. We hope everyone has recovered from taking your ITEs if you took them this year. And we are so excited that today officially marks our 2-year mark of starting two onk ducks. It has been a little while since we've done a reintroduction, so we figured we would do that today, talk a little bit about why we picked Team Onk and what our study plans were.
Yeah. So happy 2-year anniversary, Corrine. This is pretty stinking awesome. Like we talked about, I'm sure, a few times, we started this podcast truly on a whim. We had a quick phone call together. We started a Google document. And the first thing we had to do was figure out, how do you record a podcast? So thank you guys so much for bearing with us through all of our less than tech savvy ways. And, you know, thanks for giving us our feedback and episode content, as you guys do. And so just to remind you guys, this podcast, our mission is to have short episodes that you guys can listen to on your drive to and from work, when you're preparing or having your morning coffee, to fit in those quick board review tidbits, because we know how overwhelming learning all of HEMONC can be. We were in your shoes not too long ago and still are in your shoes, still learning daily. We may eventually will begin tackling some other topics related to oncology, like FDA approvals, exciting new trials. So again, feel free to keep sending us topics and ideas. So to reintroduce ourselves, I am Sam. I am a sarcoma oncologist, and I also do GI oncology, mostly hepatocellular carcinoma. I'm the Associate Fellowship Program Director here at Indiana University, where I work. And of course, I have an interest in clinical research as well as a passion for medical education.
And I am Corrine. I am a GU medical oncologist. I am acting fellowship program director for the HEMONC Fellowship. And I, of course, have also an interest in medical education and also an interest in healthcare equity and clinical research, specifically in GU oncology and immuno-oncology. And so, as Sam mentioned, you know, we started this on a whim. We found that we wish we had a podcast when we were studying for our boards. And hopefully a lot of you are finding this helpful. And we do have some very exciting guest experts in the next few weeks. And we've heard a few suggestions this week based on the recent Heme ITE, such as topics like bone marrow transplant donor selection, factor deficiencies, calculating factor replacement, WBC disorders, lines of treatment for ALL, CAR-T, and how to manage the toxicities based on the grade, mechanism of action of certain drugs, amyloidosis. And a lot of you reached out saying you found, you know, some of our episodes really helpful for your ITE, like the Hodgkin's, platelet dysfunction, von Willebrand. So again, thank you for the feedback. And so now let's dive into why we both love HEMONC. And so Sam, what is one of the reasons that you love HEMONC?
So I think, hands down, the best part of this field is the patients. I think unanimously, whoever you ask who is in hematology or oncology, they will all say the patients are what drove them into the field. That is the cornerstone. That is our backbone of why we do what we do.
Absolutely. So I totally agree that grateful patients, as well as the long-term patient connections and relationships that you can have, is the most gratifying part of what we do. And we can follow patients and their families for years in some scenarios and chat with them, not just about their cancer, but about their families. You know, I had some conversations with patients just this week about tennis matches, their March Madness brackets, amongst others.
Exactly. Big milestones. We like to talk about weddings, and I love talking about new grandbabies. So those long-term, deep, meaningful connections we get to have with our patients, hands down, why I love the field so much.
And even if cure or long-term remission is not possible, we also have the gratification of helping people navigate difficult decisions, including end-of-life decisions. And these are some of the most impactful moments that we share with our patients to ensure that the end of life looks like they and their families envisioned it.
Agreed. I like to remind our patients that enrolling in hospice or transitioning to best supportive care is not giving up at all. That is not the terminology anyone should ever hear or be thinking of. It really just means we're switching our focus on a new form of treatment so the patient can feel as best as possible and spending quality time with family and friends for however long they may be able to.
Definitely. And we work very closely with our multidisciplinary teams, our surgical colleagues, radiation oncology, palliative care, nutrition, nurse navigators, amongst others, to make sure that we can minimize any symptoms that a patient may have. And cancer care is so complex. We must always consider patients' comorbidities and remember that we are internists at our core. And honestly, we still use the foundation of internal medicine on a daily basis, whether you're thinking about someone's diabetes when you're starting steroids, or thinking about depression management and thinking about how that may interact with some of their other drugs.
Agreed. And another amazing part about being in oncology is that it is a rapidly changing and living, growing field. It changes every single day with new trials, treatments, FDA approvals, and even from when we started this podcast 2 years ago, the landscape in some solid tumors have changed so greatly, we're having to redo episodes almost yearly.
Absolutely. So in our positions, we have so many research opportunities, including enrolling patients into clinical trials. And we meet with pharmaceutical companies in the cooperative groups. We can help design trials. And really, as Sam mentioned, the landscape has changed so quickly. You know, for example, when we first did our bladder cancer episode 2 years ago, we didn't have what is now the new standard of care as of the last few months with EV Pembrose. So it's really, really exciting.
It is. It's exciting to hear about these outcomes for cancer patients changing so dramatically at such a rapid pace. And again, this is just thanks to science. We have not only chemotherapies, but we have immunotherapies, targeted therapies, and cellular therapies that are coming down the pipeline, which is great. So now let's go over our individual board studying plans and tips. So Corinne, tell us what you did for your boards.
So I tried to be somewhat consistent throughout fellowship by ramping it up towards the end of fellowship. So I did take the ITEs somewhat seriously. I didn't study for all the sections, but for example, the first year I took the ITE, I decided to really study well for GU oncology and see if I could ace those questions. And then knowing that if I could do well in that section with whatever method I was studying, I could replicate to the others. And so I often tell my fellows to do that so that it's not so overwhelming that you think you have to know everything when you're taking the ITEs. And whenever I did certain blocks, like if I was doing breast clinic, for example, I tried to watch the board review videos. I used the MD Anderson ones, and then also tried to do hemonc questions throughout that block of the breast cancer section. I also opened NCCN basically for every patient and fellowship. And I know one attending said, always focus on the category one for board purposes, because those are the things that are testable. And my study plan started in July. And so we took our boards in November. And Sam and I both have study plans that we've posted before, and we can make them available again. But those were some of the strategies that I took. And so Sam, how did you study?
Yeah. So similar to you. I studied a lot through my fellowship. I focused a lot on patient-driven reviewing of the literature, since I remember a lot by taking a case, if it was a breast case or, you know, a gastric cancer case, and diving deep into the literature. It helped me retain, being able to recall back to a certain patient that I was caring for to say, oh yes, I remember I looked up this study and that study, and this is why we made that decision over this decision. I would also, like you, I'd prep for rotations by reading the end of the NCCN guidelines. There's the discussion slides, and they are a terrific overview. I tell all of the first-year fellows, this is where you guys should really start. So if I had a GU oncology block or a GI oncology block, that's where I would go to, just to get that 50-yard line view of the diagnosis, the workup, local therapy, systemic therapy. It's a great place to start. I spent the month before my ITEs watching what I felt were the highest yield MD Anderson videos. And so that was GI, GU, breast, and lung. And I did a lot of practice questions. I used hemonquestions.com, which I know you used also, Corinne. And I found that the questions that I got wrong, I actually remembered the most. So getting them wrong during practice helped me get them right on test day. I didn't get serious about board setting until July before the board, same like you, and I really amped up my studying then. We will post again our outlines that we had for our weekly studying. And then when it came closer to the last 2 months of September and October, I did weekend board review with one of my co-fellows. We went through questions, we picked topics, and we really just kind of hit the high notes.
Definitely. And then one of the most asked questions that we get is about our cheat sheets. So Sam and I both created cheat along the way for both of the study plans that we made. So for example, I had my hemonc pocketbook, and then I would watch the video, and then I would do the questions, and then I would highlight things and make my cheat sheet. And then as I was doing more and more questions, I would highlight the things on my cheat sheets.
Exactly. So those cheat sheets, I mean, I did this kind of through my studying career, and it really helped for the HEMOC boards. Having that 1 to 2 page review of the highest yield facts on each topic, I would, when I was too tired at the end of the day, since again, you're going to be a new attending and taking on that role as well as studying in most cases. And so when I would be at the end of a busy day, I would just flip through those review sheets to kind of just passively review. Also, the days leading up to boards, that's really when I went right to my cheat sheets just to hit those points again, even the morning of, especially for electrophoresis for hematology. And I know we reference these a lot. We have some examples of that we posted. Some other study materials that we loved, you referenced it, Corinne, the Oncology Pocketbook, Hematology and Transfusion Medicine Board Review Made Simple. This is a great book you can get on Amazon. It is like hematology for dummies, which is what I needed. The Oncology Board Review Blueprint Study Guide. This is out of the Michigan group. It's a great for quick outlines and quick tidbits. The videos that we loved for hematology was the ASH Board Review Series. Also the MD Anderson videos, and I know GW is out there as well. So this is kind of just the 50-yard line of how we studied. And so as always, guys, thank you so much for listening. Please feel free to reach out to us with any comments, suggestions on our Instagram or our Twitter to OncDocs.
Absolutely. In addition, if you want to support us, the best way is to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you.